So we are slouching our way to the end of what could only be characterized as a very interesting year. And so I'm going to ask you, have you done it yet? Have you donated to On the Media? Because I know you're out there. We're talking to you. We need you. And you're with us, so I suspect you need us too. Lend us a hand. Text OTM to 69866. That's OTM 69866. Or go to onthemedia.org and hit the donate button. It doesn't take any time, but we could sure use the help and the vote of confidence. Thanks a lot, and have a great new year. And this week in the OTM podcast extra slot, we are sharing a segment produced by our friends at Studio 360. Take it away, Kurt.
Philip K. Dick was one of the great American science fiction writers. His stories have been turned into movies like Blade Runner and Total Recall and Minority Report. But one of his best-known novels is only partly sci-fi and isn't about the future. It is set in the early 1960s when it came out. The premise is that Germany and Japan won World War II, and they split the spoils. Japan got Western America, and the Nazis got the East. It's called The Man in the High Castle, and it is now a terrific TV series on Amazon. The first season appeared last fall, and I happily binged it. Since I was a little kid when it takes place in the early 60s, it has an eerie familiarity for me. The second season is just out, just as the real America suddenly seems kind of unfamiliar to me. With me to talk about this is James Poniewozik, the chief television critic for the New York Times. His recent article on Man in the High Castle is called An Alternative America Hits Home. Hello, Jim. Thanks.
Hey, thank you.
So, in your article about this new season, you say, quote, "It would be denial to say it plays no differently now than it did before a year ago." Because why?
Because there are actual real Nazis out there who are pretty psyched right now. You know, rampant on social media, on Reddit, cheering on Donald Trump. Maybe not overtly encouraged by Donald Trump, but retweeted by him, not really vigorously refuted by him. And post-election, you know, we've seen the spectacle of Richard Spencer leading his minions in a Hail Trump chant.
Well, in fact, we have a clip of that, Richard Spencer being the head of a white nationalist organization. And this conference, which took place in a federal building in Washington, not very far from the White House, just after the election.
Hail Trump! Hail our people! Hail victory!
And people during that hooray thing were actually giving Nazi salutes. Spencer afterwards said, oh, it was just exuberant. And I think he said even it was ironic in some fashion. So cut to the fiction on TV, Man in the High Castle, this new season. First episode, first few minutes, right at the beginning of the show. It's a classroom in this suburban American high school.
Class, rise. I swear I will observe the law, conscientiously fulfill my duties at home and school, be faithful and obedient, and pledge absolute allegiance until death to the leader of the Nazi Empire, Adolf Hitler.
And, of course, Heil is hail. When Spencer used that phrase, hail the people, hail Trump, all that.
The parallels were not lost on him. Yes. The translation is.
Now, okay, there's Richard Spencer, and there are these neo-Nazis using social media, and there are hundreds, thousands, I guess, of people who, in whatever sense, subscribe to this. They're not yet taking over our high schools, I guess. But I thought your article was really smart and played it correctly, because we can't, if we pay attention to the news, watch this show without thinking of this part of the Trump phenomenon. The New York Times gave your article great big play on two pages and huge pictures and big headlines about this part of it. It wasn't just about the right. Trump parallels. There was some criticism, and one of the places I saw this story and the New York Times being slagged on your account was on Morning Joe on MSNBC. I want to play a bit of that.
Here's a picture of Sieg Heil, and it says a second season of a drama about resisting darkness finds relevance in a post election nation. If you think that's outrageous, Mike.
Well, reading the piece, you make the jump into the page. This is about a TV series, The Man in the High Castle, a TV series. Here's the jump headline. TV's United States of Sieg Heil finds a neary relevance.
A neary relevance.
What did you make of that?
I expected that. I mean, I can certainly see that, people are going to come across this and say, oh, the New York Times is saying Trump is Hitler, and right. And I tried to make the point in the piece. Look, this TV show is not a documentary,
It's a work of art.
It's a work of art. And, I think that there nonetheless, we do live in a moment where a lot of these despicable elements within our society, the KKK, neo-Nazis, and so on, run-of-the-mill Islamophobes, feel validated and empowered and exuberant.
And the guy who has run Breitbart News, which he himself described as a platform for the so-called alt-right, is the chief White House strategist.
Right. There's a lot of space between Trump is literally Hitler and
yes.
Everything is fine.
Yes.
And a lot of the stuff in that space is, bad enough on its own.
Right. And you didn't have to stretch very hard.
Yeah.
I mean, it would have been weird to write about this program now without making some version of the discussion you had.
Yes. I mean, it would be stupid to look at this and say, oh, this is America today. And I think, anybody looking around them can see this is not literally America today. But I come from a Jewish family. When I see people in a gathering in Washington, D.C. giving the Nazi salute, I do feel an eerie relevance. That's not the same as saying Donald Trump is totally a Nazi.
Right.
And I think people are wrong to read that into that. But it's disturbing. And fiction, often in not exactly parallel, analogous ways, in exaggerated ways, is one way we engage in the mental exercise of how we deal with disturbing circumstances in life, which, that is pretty freaking disturbing.
And your kicker made me go, which was about how reality sort of had overtaken this fiction. Quote, if you wanted to ask what would I do if it happened here in the past, you had to watch a TV show, implying that Americans now have to ask themselves, what will I do because it now may actually happen here?
Yeah, which is not to say that we're being ruled by Nazis, but you're seeing the stirrings of things that are illiberal, anti-democratic, bigoted. One thing that I led into that with is that in the new season of The Man in the High Castle, one of the curiosities is that in this alternative history, it turns out that there were, in fact, still Japanese American internment camps. And it went differently in this case in the show. Mild spoiler alert, but we lost the war. They were liberated by the Japanese, and the Japanese Americans held there were viewed hostily by the conquering Japanese. But in any case,
great fictional twist.
Segue from that to the fact that not long after the election, a Trump supporter was being interviewed on Fox News by Megyn Kelly, asked about Donald Trump's on again, off again, sort of sometimes on and off Muslim entry ban, justified it by citing the historical precedent of Japanese American internment camps.
I know the ACLU is going to challenge it, but I think it'll pass. And we've done it with Iran back a while ago. We did it during World War II with Japanese, which, call it what you
Come
will,
on.
maybe
you're
wrong.
Not, you're not proposing we go back to the days of internment camps, I hope.
No. I'm not proposing that at all, Megan. But what I am saying
better
is
than
that
to suggest
we need to protect
that.
America,
I mean, that's the kind of stuff that gets people scared, Carl.
Right. But I'm just saying there is precedent for it. And I'm not saying I agree with it. But in this case, I absolutely believe that a regional
base. You can't be citing Japanese internment camps as precedent for anything the president-elect is going to do.
Yes, this is not an exact parallel to, fascism in the 1930s or the 1940s. It doesn't have to, nothing bad comes on you all at once. And even if it's not the same kind of bad
right.
thing, when you start encountering these things, that's when you start asking yourself, you start asking yourself, I'm actually living in a situation where, things like this are being talked about. And getting back to The Man in the High Castle, I think that one thing that has been very interesting about that show, it's not the greatest show on television, but some of the most interesting things it does, I don't know if you'd agree with this, is dealing with the culture of Occupied America, which is basically asking themselves, what would a fascist occupied America look and feel like? They very carefully thought through, oh, what would the popular music be like? Well, you'd remove all the non-Aryan influences. And you know, it would be this very sort of bubblegum pop.
Right.
You know, I think there was a Rock Hudson movie in the first episode, that sort of thing.
Well,
but deracinated in that way. And it brings up this sort of, you know, curious, you know, insinuation that if an invading army were creating a fascist America at that time, you'd have some raw materials here that you could build. You know, it's not just like imposing Teutonic culture on a subjugated country.
The other thing you mentioned that's in the second season that sounded really interesting, which is a police show on TV that seems to, that justifies the police state Nazi tactic.
American Reich, it's called.
Now you listen and you listen good, mister.
You cops, always towing the Nazi line.
Let's say we tow your line.
Sieg Heil.
American Reich, coming this fall.
Yes, and it's again, in this American world of Nazi-occupied America, there's still primetime television. You know, there's still very almost familiar-looking
like
diversions.
Dragnet?
It basically is modeled on a Dragnet-type television show. You know, and again, that kind of shows you, it's not to say the original Dragnet was authoritarian in its way. It wasn't fascist, but you know, but there are elements of familiar culture that you can take, put a little spin on them, and they can be adopted to these sort of purposes.
And one of the most interesting things to me about this whole resonance is that it was entirely accidental, right? They made the first season before Donald Trump ran this new one when he couldn't possibly have won, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think this was ever their intent with the show. I mean, you know, obviously alternative histories involving World War II are you know, a very long time thing.
Right.
Arguably in, you know, pop culture and literature, there are even closer parallels. You know, look at something like Philip Roth's The Plot Against America, where that is actually, you know, it imagines a Charles Lindbergh administration.
Right.
And actually that fascist-type regime in America being voted into power. But yeah, things like this, you know, happen accidentally all the time. 24 was picked up by Fox before the September 11th attacks. It just happened to become this, you know, signal show of the early War on Terror era after the fact.
And ironically, this show, Man in the High Castle, I have to believe that if they'd been developing it and just were like pitching it now, there's no way it would get on the air.
I think it'd be tough. There are so many outlets that I guess I would never say never, but you would certainly have hurdles now that you would not have had in the past. Yes.
Exactly.
Morning Joe would get on you.
Yeah. This seeing everything as various kinds of pop culture now as a parable or an allegory for this president is going to be unavoidable. And as you point out in the piece, and I was unaware of this, that the head of the Disney company had to come out and say, oh, no, the Star Wars film Rogue One, not a political parable, right?
This actually originated, and it's not a story that I followed closely, but from rumors that were circulating that its script had actually been rewritten to be anti-Trump or something like that, which, you know,
is impossible.
Exactly. But just the notion of Bob Iger finding it necessary to say, oh, there are no political statements in Star Wars where the stormtroopers are actually called stormtroopers. Like, there's probably almost no more blatant Nazi parallel in you know, than the original Star Wars films in popular movies.
Exactly.
You know, so there's going to be all sorts of, I'm sure, movies and TV and books take time to produce, accidental parallels and resonances that come out. And, you know, probably also, you know, a bit of a lag time in popular culture, because I think, like everybody else, like most people in the political media, like apparently most people in the campaigns, I doubt that many people in Hollywood thought that Donald Trump was actually going to win. And you know, and so you're going to have a lot of pop culture coming out over the next year or whatever that was conceived with the assumption of a different world, you know?
Well, and the one I've been thinking about, and the next season starts in the spring, is The Americans, about these Russian, Soviet characters passing themselves off as attractive young Americans in the 1980s in Washington. I've suggested more than once to the co-creator of that show, Joe Weisberg, that they write in a Donald Trump character. He's young. He's in the 80s. He's in a honeypot with what's her name? But I don't think they're going to.
At least Paul Manafort will turn up, I'm sure.
Well, there you go. Exactly. I mean, exactly. Trump's former campaign director was in that world as a PR guy in the 80s. So
yeah,
it writes itself.
Yeah, there'll be an epilogue, I'm thinking now.
Exactly. So you said you don't think it's the greatest show on television. What do you make of it as a show apart from all this political relevance?
It's entertaining. It's to me, it is the TV equivalent of a page turner.
A good page turner.
Yeah. If you read the original novel, it's not big on plot, and they really had to, make a lot of departures in order to create an ongoing storyline.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, it's a single novel, and it's sort of anti-plot and very, philosophically musing. There's a lot about fate and, religion and Eastern mystery. Yeah, exactly. But the result is that there is, a great driving mystery and a lot of action, and it's exciting. The characters, unfortunately, and this is what I think keeps it from being a very great show, is that the characters are just not as developed anywhere near as well as the world is, especially the central characters. There's a fair amount of wooden acting in it.
The Japanese guys are good.
Inspector Kido and Trade Minister Tagami, and the American Nazi officer John Smith.
Yes.
In the plot that takes place on the East Coast.
Right.
These supporting characters who are functionaries of some level or another on the winning side, but they're not good guys exactly, but they are at odds with people and factions. Yeah. That's where it gets very interesting, where it's a little better developed.
The production design, though, is amazing to watch.
Yeah.
The way San Francisco and New York look, and how the industrial design in the East is somewhat different than the industrial design of the West. That's pretty cool.
The Nazis are really into their infrastructure.
yeah.
That's like another...
Yeah, that's true.
There are high-speed trains in the East, supersonic jets. That's what I think the show is among the best shows on TV as, is sort of having thought through what are the consequences to the world? How would this world develop after having been like this for 17, 18 years,
right.
Whatever it's been?
The shots of the Nazi New York City shows Times Square a lot. As somebody who works in Times Square, does that give you a frisson when you see it?
A bit. New York belongs to the world, so I would think it gives everybody a little bit of a shock, but yeah.
Jim, thank you.
Thank you.
I took a little trip to my hometown. I only stopped just...
James Poniewozik is the chief television critic for the New York Times, and you can now binge watch all of season one and season two of The Man in the High Castle on Amazon.
The music came from within my heart.
You can find Studio 360 on your local radio station or download the podcast from iTunes. Thanks for listening to this On the Media Podcast Extra. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And so he sings, yeah, 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 the bells were ringing, the birds were singing.
This is Ira Flatto, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, the Science Friday team has been reporting high-quality science and technology news, making science fun for curious people by covering everything from the outer reaches of space to the rapidly changing world of AI to the tiniest microbes in our bodies. Audiences trust our show because they know we're driven by a mission to inform and serve listeners first and foremost with important news they won't get anywhere else. And our sponsors benefit from that halo effect. For more information on becoming a sponsor, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.